तत्सवितुर्वरेण्यम् भर्गो देवस्य धीमहि धियो यो न प्रचोदयात्। May we meditate on that Supreme Being who dwells in the hearts of all. He is the source and sustenance of this universe. In Him we live, move, and have our being. May He illumine our hearts and may He guide us in every way. Om Shanti Shanti Shanti. Peace, peace, peace. We began this study of the Mundaka Upanishad. This is one of the most important and interesting Upanishad. It gives the very highest truth. We have already seen that there are two kinds of knowledge, the lower knowledge and the higher knowledge. The lower knowledge is of the intellect and of the mind and the senses. That is what we gather through experience of this world and intellectual studies, even of the scriptures, even the Vedas or the Bible, as you study, it is lower knowledge. Higher knowledge is that by which we know the unchangeable reality, that which is beyond the senses. In other words, what is known as the knowledge of Brahman, knowledge of God, that is the higher knowledge. And that knowledge is attained by transcending the three planes of consciousness, the waking, dreaming, and dreamless sleep. And it is pointed out throughout the Upanishads, in almost every Upanishad you will find this idea given, how you meditate upon Brahman within yourself, because that Brahman is the mind of your mind, the taste of your taste, the ear of your ear, the smell of your smell. In other words, because of the presence of that pure consciousness which is Brahman, because of that Atman that is Brahman, that the senses function, the mind functions, and the body is alive. And so one has to meditate upon Him within one's own self. Sri Ramakrishna used to give this illustration of the policeman with a lantern. What's that is called? Yes, no. You can only see outside, you know. Bullseye lantern, that's right. Oh, I forget. And with the help of that lantern, you can see everybody, see everything. But nobody sees the policeman. He is in the dark. Same way, with the light of God within us, we experience and sense and perceive this whole universe. But that, the light, to whom the light belongs, we do not know. We do not see. Because our senses are always outgoing. Now, in order that we can see, you have to pray to the policeman, now please have that lantern turned towards your own face so that we can look at it. Similarly, by controlling the outgoing senses, when we learn to go within ourselves, and when we free ourselves from all distracting thoughts and become absorbed in the Atman, where no other thought or distraction arises, then is it that something happens. And this something happens through the grace of Brahman, and you are lifted up, as it were. You see, you are flying, and then you are lifted up by another power. And then the vision of God is there. Then there is the self-realization, you know yourself. And that is the higher knowledge, supreme knowledge. Now again, of course, in the Upanishads, there is another beautiful truth brought out throughout the Upanishads, that first, you know, the experience comes when this whole universe of name and form disappears completely. There is Brahman and Brahman alone. And then again, this whole universe comes back to your consciousness. But you see this universe in a different way. Behind all this appearance, you see Brahman. Then you realize Brahman within yourself, and you realize Brahman everywhere. He is everywhere. He is everything. In the Upanishads, there is this verse that says, Brahman is above, Brahman is below, Brahman is to the right, Brahman is to the left. All is Brahman. But you see, if we try to understand all is Brahman now, with our distracted mind that is bound by the senses, then we shall misunderstand the whole thing. Because what we see the universe, we see the universe of name and form, we don't see Brahman, we don't see God. So first see God, and then you can see Him everywhere. You see, that is a point that is to be understood thoroughly. Now again, here we are coming to another point, which is rather very interesting, but we have to understand the background before we can follow the few verses that we are going to study tonight. Finite and transient are the fruits of sacrificial rites. The deluded, who regard them as the highest good, remain subject to birth and death. Living in the abyss of ignorance, yet wise in their own conceit, the deluded go round and round like the blind led by the blind. Living in the abyss of ignorance, the deluded think themselves blessed, attached to works. They know not God. Works lead them only to heaven, whence, to their sorrow, their rewards, quickly exhausted, they are flung back to earth. Now, you have to have a little background. You see, the Vedas are divided into two portions, the work portion and the knowledge portion. The knowledge portion consists of the Upanishads which you are studying. The work portion deals with rites and ceremonies and charitable work, doing good deeds, and that has a place. And in the Upanishads, you only find the knowledge of God. And when there comes the knowledge of God, then again you see that Brahman, that God everywhere in the universe, and you live in the service of all. You see, first you deny the universe, according to the Upanishads. You realize God. Then you come back and see this whole universe as a manifestation of God. Then knowing all as Brahman, you live in the service of all. The Karmakanda or the work portion teaches you that if you do charitable work, if you do some sacrificial rites, if you give something to the priest and something to the poor, in other words, if you do good deeds, you go to heaven. But this heaven again is a place of enjoyment, no doubt. But the effect is not lasting. You do not live in the heaven for eternity. According to the Hindus, there is heaven. And there is also another place called darkness. Now, you see, here we come to that idea of reincarnation. You see, everyone, every individual, good or bad, and they are all mixture of good and bad, until one attains knowledge of Brahman, knowledge of God. What happens to people after death? Of course, everybody does some good deeds, everybody does some bad deeds, everybody thinks good thoughts, and everybody thinks bad thoughts. Now, according to the nature of your deeds, both good and bad, there are effects that arise from them, and certain of those effects you have to either enjoy in heaven or suffer in the place called darkness. But your good deeds have finite results, because your deeds are finite. So you live there for a span of life. Then again, you are thrown back into earth. Now, of course, there is this idea that everybody goes to heaven and also to the place of darkness. And they enjoy and suffer according to the nature of their deeds. And then again, they come back to earth. And as they come back to earth, as they are given again opportunities, more opportunities to attain the knowledge of God. It is said that this earth, this planet, is the planet where you earn your freedom, salvation. What you call salvation, what you call freedom. You can only earn here, on earth. You go to heaven to enjoy. You don't create any karmas there. Or one can go to the other place to suffer, but cannot create any karmas. But this enjoyment and this suffering are limited, finite. Results of finite deeds, then they are thrown back here. So whatever you have to earn here. Freedom, knowledge of Brahman, you have to earn here, here and now. And again, you find there are priests, you know, during that period. There were priests who emphasized upon these ceremonials and offering oblations to the fire, and then also doing good deeds, and which are all good. If you can do all those deeds in the spirit of service and worship, not with the idea of going to heaven, but they did those deeds, and they do also now, for instance, religion is social service, social gospel, which is very good. And so as a result of that social service and good deeds, they go to heaven. And these people again think that that is the highest, that is the supreme. God is a necessity, that's all, logical necessity. But your life must be active, you must be active, you must be doing something, you must be creative. You see, all these ideas are there. Nothing wrong. But if you limit yourself to such, then you miss the boat, as it were. That is a slang phrase. That is, you don't attain that union with God, which is the ultimate goal. Now let me read out to you. Finite and transient are the fruits of sacrificial rites. The deluded, who regard them as the highest good, remain subject to birth and death. Yes, they go to heaven. Then again they come back. They remain subject to birth and death and rebirth. Living in the abyss of ignorance, yet wise in their own conceit, know these great scholars, theologians, priests, you know. The deluded go round and round like the blind led by the blind. Living in the abyss of ignorance, the deluded think themselves blessed. You see, most people, you know, they think they're all right. Doing all right. Oh, how are you? Fine. Attached to works, they know not God. And mark the words, attached to works. It is not that he is condemning activity. But attached to works means attached to the results of your actions. You are doing good deeds. And you know you are doing it, you are the doer. And naturally, you want the fruits of your actions. You get them. But they are limited. And here we come to the teachings of the Gita. You see, the Gita came later, you know. And the Gita, here is the beauty of the teachings of the Gita. It spiritualized action. It pointed out how through action also, through work also, if we do it in the spirit of non-attachment, in the spirit of worship, how that also becomes worship and meditation, and that leads to liberation. You see, Sri Krishna in the Gita did that. But in the Vedic period, you see, that it was not so expressed rightly. Only emphasis upon meditation. But there is one Upanishad which points out that both action and meditation must go together. Attached to works, they know not God. Works lead them only to heaven, whence, to their sorrow, their rewards quickly exhausted, they're flung back to earth. Considering religion to be observance of rituals and performance of acts of charity, the deluded remain ignorant of the highest good. Having enjoyed in heaven the reward of their good works, they enter again into the world of mortals. But wise, you see, here it comes, how to gain that higher knowledge, the knowledge of Brahman. But wise, self-controlled and tranquil souls who are contented in spirit and who practice austerity and meditation in solitude and silence are freed from all impurity and attained by the path of liberation to the immortal, the truly existing, the changeless Self. Now again, let me point out another truth. The life of an individual is divided, according to the Vedas and the Upanishads, into four stages. Student life, life, householder's life, married life, then retired life, and then sannyas. Everyone has to renounce everything. These are the four stages through which every individual has to pass. Now, of course, you see, as a student, you learn the virtues of self-control, tranquility, and all these virtues. Then one enters into married life and does charity, good deeds, and work. Then he retires. And there he prepares himself for the last stage, when he becomes a monk. Thus everyone had to become a monk. And this Upanishad particularly is specially for the monks. It's called Mundaka, which means seven head. And seven head means monks. And so you find this going into solitude and silence. It says, wise, self-controlled, and tranquil souls who are contented in spirit and who practice austerity and meditation in solitude and silence are freed from all impurity and attained by the path of liberation to the immortal, the truly existing, the changeless self. Now in this connection again, let me point out that how in the teachings of the Bhagavad Gita, you see, this what was given, the truth that was given to the monks who lived in forest and in solitude and in silence, you see, this is called also philosophy of the forest. That was brought into the life of activity to everybody. That is the beauty of the teachings of the Gita. And again in this age, it was Ramakrishna and Vivekananda who brought down that, not that they brought down the truth, but they brought that truth again and made it possible for everyone in any kind of life, that is in any vocation, to reach the highest. Because this sannyas or renunciation does not mean that you're running away from life or going into the caves. Renunciation means to renounce attachment, to renounce me and mine. And so this very same truth is to be practiced and can be practiced by every individual, no matter what your vocation may be. But the spirit is the same. Let a man devoted to spiritual life examine carefully the ephemeral nature of such enjoyment, whether here or hereafter, as may be won by good works, and so realize that it is not by works that one gains the eternal. You see, we have to have the first the discrimination between the eternal and non-eternal. And when we discriminate between the eternal and non-eternal, we come to this understanding that Atman or Brahman or God is the one reality that is eternal, the unchangeable reality. Now then, when we come to that understanding, then we have to have dispassion for enjoyments not only of this world but of the next. That is, we cannot desire for going to heaven. We have to give up that desire also and learn to devote ourselves completely to the realization of one goal, the supreme goal, union with God. Now, you see, as I said, that this can be achieved while living in the world. If you live the spirit as it is taught here, let a man, we have to know that through work we cannot attain God. But if the work is done as worship, then it is no longer work, it is worship. And so through worship and through meditation, you see, what is meditation? To think of God. Well, if you are doing service, suppose the wife is serving the husband, or the husband is serving the wife, it has to be both sides, you see. And if the wife sees God in the husband and serves God in the husband, she is meditating. If the husband sees God in the wife and serves her, he is meditating on God. You see, then work becomes worship. You see, that is the truth emphasized in the teachings of the Bhagavad Gita. And that also was emphasized in this present age by Sri Ramakrishna and Vivekananda. Let a man devoted to spiritual life examine carefully the ephemeral nature of such enjoyment, whether here or hereafter, as may be won by good works, and so realize that it is not by works that one gains the eternal. Let him give no thought to transient things, but absorbed in meditation, let him renounce the world. To know the eternal, let him humbly approach a guru, devoted to Brahman and well-versed in the scriptures. May I invite questions? There should be some interesting questions today. No? Okay. Is the Atman in Vedanta the same as Adam in Christian Bible? Well, you know, sometimes you can twist the scriptures a little, you know. And you can show parallelism like that. You know, I often try to do that. You see, sometimes we consider scriptures like India rubber, you know, and twist it and spread it to suit your own ideas. So from that standpoint, I'd say, yes, you can say Adam is the same as Atman. And because of this, you see, Adam, originally pure, divine, made in the image of God, in the perfection of God. So Atman is also pure, free and divine. So it means the same thing. That is what I try to explain. And then you see, here comes Eve. No, don't consider yourself Eve. Eve is the identification of the Atman with this identification of the self with non-self, the ignorance. You see? Just consider, you see, there is some analogy to it. Eve was made out of a rib from Adam, you see. So it's the body, identification with the body. And that is the cause of ignorance, and then you eat the tree of knowledge, good and bad, and you are bound by karmas. But realize again the perfect nature of yourself and you are liberated. In one of your lectures, you stated that that breathing must be taught very carefully, and you don't discuss it at the public lectures. Why? Did I say that? I don't think I had said that. Oh, why do you quote, you know? I don't know. Why? And what is your feeling on Hatha Yoga? So many Americans are interested or something. Well, look. Breathing exercises are helpful. You see, I can discuss in public, there is nothing private in it. Breathing exercises are helpful. But in order that you can practice the breathing exercises correctly, there are certain conditions of life and living. And in this busy city, with your busy activities of life, and without proper, fulfilling the proper conditions, for instance, perfect chastity, and dietary rules to be observed very carefully, you cannot run too much. And there are many such conditions, if you practice, they are helpful. Helpful in this way, that they help you to concentrate your mind, to attain concentration. Now again, if they are done not properly, if there is anything wrong, then this is what happens. One may get some sickness or disease of some kind which no medical doctor can diagnose. And you just are helpless. This may happen, or the brain can be deranged. So that is what breathing exercises are. Now, just by the practice of devotion, concentration and meditation, you see, your breath becomes regulated automatically without practicing the breathing exercises. It may take a little longer, yes, but there is no danger. Now again about Hatha Yoga. Hatha Yoga are physical exercises. Yes, Americans are very eager to learn to practice Hatha Yoga, because Hatha Yoga tells you that you can keep your youth forever, you see, and that you can live a very long, long life, and all your wrinkles in your face will be removed, you see. But tell me, what has that to do with spiritual life? You put your attention to the body. And spiritual life is to rise above this body consciousness. So the effect is completely different. So I have no objection, you go and learn those exercises, you know, and stand on your head and all that. Do every kind of thing to gain back your youth. But no good. What is the essence of inertia? Is it a carryover from a lower evolutionary stage? Well, inertia is tamas. And there are three energies. Inertia also is an energy. Rajas activity is an energy. Tranquility as calmness also is an energy. And these three types of energies form what we call our mind and what you may call matter. You see, mind and matter, according to the cosmology of Vedanta, are of the same substance. And that substance is a combination of these three forces or energies. Now there is that inertia in the body, there is the activity in the body, there is the tranquility in the body, and the same three exist in the mind. Now again, you see, you give indulgence to the one or the other, that becomes predominant. So, you see, it is not that lower evolutionary stage or anything, just when you are lazy and lethargic and you like to be remaining lethargic. If you are married, ask your wife to give you a good cake, or if ask your husband to give a cake, or ask your somebody to give you a cake and wake you up. How is prasad made and offered? Can it be offered by the devotee in his own home? You see, prasad is a technical term, which means that the food that is offered to the deity, that is offered to God, and that becomes prasad. See? And so if you offer God the food before you eat, you are eating prasad. It's all in your mind, you know. How does suffering and illusion come into existence? I wish I knew. You know, this question, how did Maya come? This is the way the answer is given. As long as we are in ignorance, we cannot give the answer. When we rise above ignorance, then we see no ignorance, the question doesn't arise. You see? And then, you see, with suffering, you see, not suffering alone, suffering and enjoyment, both are there. That's Maya. Good and bad, both belong to the same category. And how this Maya came is a problem that cannot be answered because of this reason also. You cannot ask that question logically. Why do you ask, why is there Maya? Oh, you hear this is Maya. You hear from somebody. And so you ask, why is this Maya? But do you realize exactly that you are in Maya? You see? Do you realize exactly that you are in ignorance? And then, the moment you feel you are in ignorance, your first question will be, how can I come out of this ignorance? See, that would be a logical question. How can I come out of this ignorance? You know, Buddha, he said very beautifully, he expressed it very beautifully, he said, a man is hit by an arrow. Now, what should you do? You just look at that and say, now, who shot that arrow? Was he a tall man? Was he a short man? Was he dark? Was he brown? What kind of a man was he? Are those such questions you ask? Of course, the insurance man will ask that. But what you do is take off that and go to a doctor and try to heal him. Same way. We are suffering. How to come out of this suffering? That must be our question. Are our daily lives influenced by the planets? If so, why and how? Thank you. Well, I don't know. You know, if we are influenced by the planets and where are we, you know? Life becomes slavery. You are already influenced by our own impulses and desires and passions, and then again if planets influence us, that would be just awful, you know. So, I don't believe that planets can influence strong-willed people, you know. But planets can influence the weak-minded people. Swami, please explain what happens to those who commit suicide if they're... is there suffering for desire? You know, in our scriptures it is considered the same as, worse than murder even. One has no right to take life. That's the truth. And now you see what happens. Suppose X has a span of life. He has to live, say, he is supposed to die, say, at 80. And X commits suicide at 40. See, for all these 40 years, for the rest of these 40 years, he remains earthbound. You see, a person commits suicide thinking that this would relieve him from his sufferings. But instead of that, he creates more suffering. You see, this is what happens. All his desires and passions are there. For instance, he feels thirsty. He feels hungry. And if he's a smoker, he wants to smoke. And he sees the cigarette but can't smoke. He sees the water, can't drink. He sees the food, can't eat. You see. And so the suffering is intense. Now this is called the worst sin in our scriptures. And then again, you see, the great seer philosopher Shankara points out that those who do not struggle to realize the self, they are in a way committing suicide. You see. Because there is the blissful consciousness, there is the perfection right by him, and he neglects that. And so it's a sort of committing suicide.
हरि ओम ओम सहना भवतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सहवीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्वी नावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ओम मे ब्रह्मन् प्रोटेक्ट अस मे गाइड अस मे गिव अस स्ट्रेंथ एंड राइट अंडरस्टैंडिंग मे वी हैव लव फॉर ऑल. May our study bring light unto us. Om Shanti Shanti Shanti. Peace, peace, peace.